Off the ball with BetDaq.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sports 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.
So as Champions Cup weekends go, it was pretty good for the Irish provinces. Leinster winning away on Friday night, 37 points to 10 against Northampton. Munster 38, Leicester 0, one of the more bizarre scorelines you tend to see in these competitions. Ulster Claremont was a cracker. 39 points Ulster, 32 Claremont, and Connacht losing five of their own lineouts away to Wasps, lost 32 points to 17. Pat Lamb saying a victory next weekend opens the group wide open again. Connacht kicking off at 5:30 on Saturday to Wasps. Leicester, Munster next Saturday, 3:15. Also on Saturday, the 7:45 game will be Leinster, Northampton at the Aviva. And then on Sunday, it will be back to France for Ulster to take on Claremont. We've Eddie O'Sullivan on the line and Gavin Comiskey of the Irish Times here in the studio. I don't want to overreact to one set of results, obviously, Gavin, but we're in the media, so let's try and ramp this up.
Let's do it.
But it genuinely did feel like one of the best weekends for Irish rugby in quite some time, and we've talked ad nauseum over the last number of years about the disparity in budgets with French and English clubs, and it kind of I can't quite remember Irish provinces having such a good weekend.
There's a couple of things you're about it. There is even Connacht's performance for 60 minutes shows that these English clubs are very beatable. And this was the thing that when the Irish provinces beat them consistently over the years was because they have four or five guys in their team that are not up to the international standard. Now Saracens aside, Wasps arguably aside as well, but Connacht were right there with them until their set piece fell apart. Leicester were. Like, I actually don't want to take it away because Munster played really, really well then in Limerick. I was down at it and everything like that, and they were superb. And there's not a player on the pitch you could pull out. They'll find things wrong with it, but a player on the pitch you pull out and go, there's a flaw there in that Munster team. But Leicester were terrible. Like, they were like a bit of a disgrace to that leather jersey that has won the last two times they've come to Thomond Park,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Richard Cockerill afterwards was almost surreal. He was like, it's like a jester. He was almost like happy. It was almost as if they'd won a try scoring bonus point. He was like, not to worry, lads. We'll sort. And it was like, we should be able to sort it out next week. We're missing a few players.
That's interesting because I read the quotes where he said things like, the performance was unacceptable, we got our arses smacked, and I thought he was raging. But that
no,
wasn't
it was just literally because people were just pressing him, going, really? Like,
right.
Yeah, come on, like, more. Yeah, everyone knows like how like they call his place where he sits in Welford Road Cocker's cage, so he can't get down near the ref. Like, we know he's got a fiery temper and all that.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty decent guy. His persona with the media was like, oh no, everything will be fine, it's all okay. But they've like deep line problems there. If they can't, like, their back, Peter O'Mahony and CJ Sander beat up their back row, like, literally.
Yeah.
It was tearing the ball off them as if they were young fellas, like as if it was like men against boys.
Yeah.
And that was before Munster even needed to bring on these huge South African prop and Jan Klein, their big lock, who they didn't even need. The game was done and dusted by the time the reinforcements that Erasmus has gone and recruited,
yeah,
came on. It was a done deal. It makes it so strange, like, because they're just going to show up in Welford Road. Leicester teams always show up in Welford Road.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to see how. I don't think it can swing completely because you got Tyler Blenhall there now, who's shown this lovely control. And
yeah.
Munster can attack you from several areas now. I love this. My favourite thing about them was when they're going up in the air, using Darren Sweetenham in the air, and Keith Earls even did it as well. Like, they got loads of joy from that, from batting down, and their pack is looking really sharp.
Yeah. Eddie, we'll get into the specifics of that game because I know you were both in Thomond, but just in broad terms, the doomsday scenario was that these days were over for Irish rugby and that the financial clout of French and English clubs meant we wouldn't see weekends like this for a long time.
I would temper it a little bit. I would agree that Connacht played very well and they were right in the shake-up with 20 to go and missed a kick, a goal, and then Wasp, you know, pulled away. So I think Connacht won't be too disappointed with the performance, certainly about the result. I just temper things a little bit with Munster and Leinster. I thought, as Gavin said, Leicester were appalling. I mean, I scratched my head to think if I could see a Leicester team play so badly. They were in every area. They brought nothing. And I thought, after 20 minutes, the game was over, unless something shifted seismically. And it never shifted. It was just one way traffic. They were just abysmal. But I think they'll bounce back at home for sure. But they're just so bad at the moment. They seem to be really out of sorts. And I thought Friday night, Northampton were as bad, if not worse, in some ways. You know, they were at home and they just didn't show up at all. I mean, I thought, you know, consider the you know, the way Leinster had to move around their backs and stuff and basically kind of deal with injuries early in the game. They never broke stride. And they are two powerhouses of English rugby, and they just were really off the pace. But I think Northampton have been struggling all season to find their form. So I can't see Northampton coming to Dublin and winning like they did 3 years ago. I don't see it in them at the moment. I don't want to put the hex on Leinster, but I don't see how they get on. I do think Leinster will be a different kettle of fish, you know, at Welford Road, as they always are. So I think probably the performance for the weekend for me was the Ulster performance. I think they played a Claremont team that came to play, and they really, you know, went behind, got stuck in, took it back again. They'd be disappointed that they really had Claremont dead and buried. Like, Claremont had nothing out of the game. They left to get two tries in the last quarter, where they dominated. And I think that that two tries gave them 2 points. It gave them the losing bonus point and the four-try bonus point, which changed the dynamics of the group. Mm. But I thought Ulster really played well, despite their losing their shape in the last 20. But I think down to that would have been the bench, you know, like the Claremont bench just brought more to the party than the Ulster bench. I mean, Rodney Ayew came on and he almost single-handedly lost the game for Ulster. He was you know, just stacked up in the scrum like a deck chair every time he went in. And then he the worst thing ever, he gave away a high tackle and a yellow card. I mean, like, if Claremont had got the draw and got 4 points out of the game, it would have been probably a lot of it down to the way the dynamics of the bench changed the game. And I still think Ulster played very well. But again, they're going into the Lions then next week, because Claremont are interested in the Heineken, the European Cup this year. Mm. They came to Ravenhill, they came to Kingspan Park to win. And they, even when they were like dead and buried, they came back for more. So I think that Ulster performance, so probably over the four games of the Irish provinces, was the better one, because it was against the best opposition who really came to play. But I think we have to, you know, take into account that Northampton were really, really out of sorts, have been all season, and Leicester were as bad as I've ever seen them.
Right, okay.
I think they're factors in it, you know.
Yeah. Just to give people a sense of the mood at Thomond, Eddie, I know you were there alongside Dave and Keith Wood for the commentary.
Conor Murray gives it to Peter O'Mahony. O'Mahony brought down by Mullapola. They're to the right of the post now, 10 out from the try line. Oh, brilliant pass to Zemo! And that's a try for Munster. Conor Murray with a no-look pass around his body. It outfoxed everybody, bar Simon Zemo, who crosses for his third try of the season. By John Ryan, drops his shoulder, bulldozes his way towards the try line. Stander comes in with a carry. They're about 2 or 3 feet short of the try line. Murray in field. Jacko Tante trying to go over, and he scores the try. Jacko Tante gets his first try in a Munster shirt, and Munster lead by 24 points to nil. Zebo on the 10-metre line, looks outside to Sweetnam, little skip in the air, and off he goes. The Corcoran's got options left and right, looks inside, take it on by Tante, that's a wonderful try. Popped across to the right-hand side, Sweetnam puts in from his right wing, little tink over the top, Tante shows some pace, Tante getting it in, oh, that must be a penalty try. He kicked it over the try line, and then he was tackled without the ball. There's a yellow card and a penalty try, and the bonus point is secured. You said he wasn't that quick, Woody. He certainly showed some gas there.
Oh, I tell you, it's great to be proven wrong.
Clock ticks past the 80-minute mark, and there is the full-time whistle. Leicester have lost to nil. Ulster did it to them back in 2003 when they beat them 33-0 up in Ravenhill. It's not something that happens very often to Leicester Tigers in Europe, but they have been beaten out the gate this afternoon, Eddie. 38-0, Munster with another bonus point.
And again, you know, the context, the corresponding fixture last year, Leicester were 31 points to 19 winners over Munster. Eddie, what was the Leicester game plan? Like, what were they actually trying to do?
I've not been smart, but it was evident to anybody what they were trying to do. They had no energy for a start. They were playing like they were in second gear. They played a lot of lateral rugby, but I think just because they were getting dumped in the tackle, they couldn't get any go forward, so they were going laterally. They played a lot of east-west rugby. And what Munster did to them was they just ragdolled them in every aspect. I mean, they couldn't... If you saw the difference in quality of the ball, Conor Murray was getting at the rucks, was on a silver platter, and Ben Youngs was needing a shovel to dig it out after 5 or 6 seconds. It was just... And that was down to the physicality. Munster were winning the collisions with the ball, and they were just thrashing the Leicester rucks defensively, and they choked them in tackles. I mean, they just beat them up. And I just thought there was no energy in Leicester. I was amazed. I mean, I was looking at it going, like, after 20 minutes, when are these guys going to wake up and play? And I think Munster, funnily enough, gave them too much respect. Understandably, you know, in the first 20, 25 minutes, like, they were getting penalties and Tyler Blendell was knocking them over. And I thought, maybe you should go to the corner here. And it wasn't until that, like, probably the 34th, 35th minute where Munster actually stopped playing the area game, which they were winning. So there was a real reason to stay at it. But they woke up and went at them. And Zeebo's try, it was a well-constructed try. It took Leicester through, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 phases. And there was that sublime pass inside to Zeebo from Conor Murray, and he was under the sticks. But they just walked him up the field and scored. And I think at that stage, Munster realised this is just, you know, 4 minutes and a half time. These guys aren't at the races.
Yeah.
And kicked on, you know. So I just couldn't see where Leicester were coming from and what they were trying to do. I mean, they were just all over the shop in every aspect of their game. They didn't have any strategy. And the number of times the ball that Munster put up a bomb and Leicester let it bounce, nobody went for it. It was just, you wouldn't see it in a junior B match. It was just unreal.
Right.
So that's why I thought Munster played really well. I don't want to take anything from Munster's performance. They ticked every box they could have ticked. But you have to put into context that this Leicester Tigers team, they weren't at the races. But Munster still scored the bones of 40 points. I'm just wondering, like, what Leicester can bring back to the table next week at Welford Road. Mm. And you could listen to Razzie Erasmus after talking to Dave McIntyre. He was trying to throw cold water on him. I mean, I could understand why he was doing that, as he was in shock himself as to how easy it was, you know.
Yeah. We are approaching the point where we have to start talking about Razzie Erasmus, Gav, and the job that he's doing, because this run, really post the death of Anthony Foley, it's been linked, and, you know, maybe we're butchering cause and effect to an extent here. Like, it could have fallen apart just as easily. Mm. And Erasmus is clearly doing very, very good things on a daily basis. How would you describe the Munster plan at the moment, the Erasmus Munster?
It's quite. They play quite a simple plan. It's all about accuracy and all that. Like, my favourite things about them is what Jack Snyder has brought as a defensive coach. Also, the way they're clearing out at rooks. It means Conor Murray can look way, like, as good as he is, I suppose. You know what I mean? There's two guys. Nobody's left alone at a breakdown. Nobody's left alone in defence. There's one guy high, one guy low. It's all of those little structural basic stuff that, if you don't have, you can't be a successful team because you can't get space or you can't stop the opposition. So it's all of that kind of stuff. And that's come in, and it's been just maybe just more regimented than we saw last year. But the defence is something that's impressive. Razzie Erasmus himself, it's quite straight bat every time he deals with you and all that. He goes back to, we're still a young coaching team. We're going to lose loads of games. There's going to be teams that are better than us. We've got young Jerry Flannery, young Felix Jones. All of this is true. Like, but
yeah,
they're just so impressive every time you see them. Now, again, Eddie's completely right. And what's really interesting is what they do now in Welford Road, how they show up and perform. Because they have all the tools now. There's a nice little team there. They're not getting, these guys aren't getting stripped by Ireland either. There's loads of guys just below the radar. And I'd say they have that little grievance there, like that John Ryans, Tommy O'Donnell's. Can't get near the Ireland squad, you know.
Yeah.
So it's but almost back to the old way where Munster are feeling hard done by. Like, they have cause and all that. So
yeah.
I actually enjoyed it now. Again, Leicester just really have to sort themselves out. But Darren Sweetenham is, and Jacko Tauta, they've built a lot around him. Darren Sweetenham is looking like he really is genuinely pushing for the Ireland team. But Jacko Tauta is gone. Francis Healy's back to play now. Stevens' day, December 26th against Leinster. So your man's gone January 1st, unless they do the opposite of what they've done, what David News 4 did with even Ruan Pienaar, sending him on his way at the end of the season.
Right.
So that's going to be very interesting how that pans out.
Right. Leicester, I mean, it is a shock. They're fourth in the Premiership, 7 wins from 10. They were going okay.
They're missing Dan Coles, missing a couple of guys.
A few injuries.
Manu Tuilagi came back, and at the end he just lost the head, which is like him before, a bit impetuous.
Yeah.
Decided not to use his arms anymore. After the third time he did it, he caught a lad's head, got a yellow card.
Yeah.
I was like, that you want your England centre, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's no help, you know.
So maybe that was a slight surprise. Injuries, you know, again, allowing for injuries. Northampton, though, have been struggling. 4 wins from 10 in the Premiership, just not going great this year. And Leinster put 37 points on them with a lot of young players in the back line. Eddie, if Dylan Hartley does that and you're the Lions coach, does something like that instantly rule him out for you?
I think, yeah, you can't have the Red Mist descending like that. I mean, that could cost your Lions series. I mean, there was absolutely, I mean, guys get red carded in games where they, you know, they make a bad judgment. They go to make a tackle, the guy ducks, it looks really bad. The referee says that's a high tackle, they're gone. This is almost premeditative, if what I could see.
Yeah.
I mean, it was he blindsided Sean O'Brien. It was a pretty cheap shot by any metric. He went in to do it, and he did it. And it was like the guy just lost the plot completely. Now, maybe he was frustrated, that he wasn't starting the game after coming back from England. Maybe he was frustrated with something else. You know, maybe he didn't enjoy his lunch. I don't know. But what he did was unacceptable, like at a professional level. So this guy wants to captain the Lions. Certainly Warren Gatland is going to take a hold on a minute. Like, this guy could lose a Lions series for you in a moment of madness. And we all thought he'd kind of got himself sorted. But there's a funny part of him was that I think Eddie Jones has kind of got him under control for England. But it does affect his performance. There is an edgy in this missing of his game for England because he's almost watched himself so closely. And maybe he goes back to Northampton and drops his guard and goes, like, I'm back in my own backyard and I can do what I want. But I think he definitely, huge question mark over his head now. No matter what suspension he gets, it's his temperament, I think, is the question mark.
Well, Eddie,
to do that and think it was going to be okay in some way, shape or form is beyond me.
Eddie Jones won't get rid of him though, Eddie, because like he knew what he was getting when he gave him the captaincy, you know.
I think he's nailed his colours to the mast, right. He can't get rid of him. But will he be the captain of the Lions? I doubt it based on that. But
Steve Hansen might pick him for the New Zealand though on that performance, because the first thing I saw when I saw it was that's similar enough to what Fekitoa did. Now it's more blatant that it's slyer, I think, because Fekitoa just
I think Fekitoa came across
swinging arms,
it was a cover tackle. I mean, Sean O'Brien is back turned and he came in and let him have it from the side. I thought it was a premeditated shot. I thought Fekitoa was definitely red card material, but I think just spur of the moment. But look, the point is that with Eddie Jones has taken a punt on him, and he has repaid Jones. But the problem is now with Hartley, if he screws up with England, he's undoes all the good work he did with England as well. I mean, the guy's a rap sheet to length of your arm. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, there can't be a reduction for good behaviour on his on Wednesday, you know. So in the context of the Lions, yeah, it's a major factor. I don't think Eddie Jones wants to abandon him now because he has let Eddie Jones down.
Yeah.
But as a Lions captain, I just don't know how you can take that punt with him.
Yeah, and it was interesting after the game, Lawrence Dallaglio turned around and went, I was an England captain. And that's unacceptable. Mm. And then he turned around and he goes, that guy's checked out on Northampton this season. He's only played two games. Now, there was injuries and all that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Tom Wood was speaking today, and who actually could have been the England captain, would have been in line for it, but obviously didn't go to him because he probably wasn't guaranteed his place. He came out and goes, yeah, we've serious disciplinary problems in our club.
Yeah.
Callum Clark, who's another lad who has done some horrendous things on a rugby pitch since he was 19 years old, he's coming back. So he'll be playing in Dublin on the weekend for Northampton. So there's another lad coming in. They're in serious disarray there under Jim Mallander. They've got horrendous problems, and Leinster should absolutely bury them.
Well, they've also
put them away.
Play for at the Aviva Bar Pride at the moment.
Ross Byrne, Johnny Sexton, I don't think he's going to get rushed back, even though they're down to one out half. I still think
we'll chat Ross Byrne in a second. But I was watching the coverage on Sky ahead of the Ulster game. I guess as much as anything, because I haven't cared too much to think about who's going to be the Lions captain. But on the back of the Hartley situation, they were talking about Rory Best as front of the queue now.
Yeah, he's been getting pushed up for a while now, Rory. Well, he's having a pretty good year.
Sure,
you know, and he's playing as good as any hooker in Europe, you know. I think Sam Warburton gets it if he gets fit, because he's Gatland's guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as we've seen from the selection so far, he's gone with what he knows, you know. And Rory Best was desperately unlucky 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
I think the difficulty with Warburton is that he's automatically Gatland sitting and said, but he's only got two other back rows to pick. Mm. And the back row competition for this Lions team is incredible. Like, I mean, even the Irish, there's a lot of guys that won't play in the Six Nations could be Lions material based on the fact if our injuries clear up and everyone's good to go in the spring, like the choices Joe Smith has to make in the back row are just ridiculously difficult. So, like, is Gatland going to pencil in his captain and tie his hands on his back row selection zone in New Zealand? That mightn't be the smartest player, like, you know, because if he's the captain, he's got to pick him in the test.
I don't think Dylan Hartley probably can't get considered for the Lions now, because he said he's going to pick on Six Nations form, and you'd imagine he's going to be suspended for the Six Nations. Ireland England on March 18th is 13 weeks away. So
he's already done 54 week suspension.
So 54, I'd say he might be doing another 20 or so.
The Leinster performance generally, so they had three European debutants in the back line. You mentioned Ross Byrne there. So we've all just come to terms with Joey Carberry
Talk to us about Ross Byrne.
Ross Byrne was not a happy man that Joey Carberry came past him. Joey Carberry more or less went, shifted from UCD to Clontarf to get game time because of Ross Byrne, you know, who was a year ahead.
And had done very well for the under-20s.
Yeah, he's quality. He plays very... I'm not saying he's Johnny Sexton or anything like that, but Ross Byrne has a similar kind of way to where he plays. You saw that crossfield kick for O'Loughlin.
Yeah.
There's all a bunch of lads who've played in the same schools team in St. Michael's and McGrath and all. There's a whole bunch of them. Levy, Luke McGrath, Everton have all come through together. Cal Marsh is injured, Ross Maloney. But yeah, Leinster's... If you actually went and watched the Leinster A team on Saturday, there's another three or four backs coming through again that they're riches from halfbacks, some not so much, but mostly centres, wingers and fullbacks. There's lots more to come. Like, this is not ending anytime soon.
Right.
Ross Byrne, I thought he hadn't been tested in that kind of environment.
Yeah, he came on after 15 minutes.
He got a bit of a bang, which he turned out it wasn't a concussion. They said it was just a laceration above his eye, so he's fine. But he looked pretty comfortable out there, though, after a few minutes, though, I thought. And that crossfield kick was... I'm not sure if Carberry or Sexton or... I don't know if any of them can do that. It was pretty special
and
for...
And by all accounts, he's a very good character. He's very vocal on the pitch as well, so he's not fazed by it. So
he realised this is my chance.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the Aviva next Saturday is a really nice game, potentially, for him to come in and boss things. Leinster generally, Eddie, Leo Cullen was asked about what's going right at the moment, and he started talking about culture again, which was telling after what Johnny Sexton had said last year. He said, we're just working hard in training, showing positive characteristics all the time. It seems like they're just sorted out a few off-the-field issues almost and are a more focused bunch, it seems like.
Well, it's a pretty talented squad.
Sure.
And a lot of the guys are... you know, that haven't been seen really regularly because they can't get into the team. There's so much talent in front of them. So I think there's this urgency around the team that, like, you know, okay, maybe you're starting, maybe you're the guy, but you get injured or you get dropped and the next guy gets in, you mightn't get back again. And that changes the culture very quickly when everybody's looking over their shoulder and you're not comfortable in your position. That, I think, has created an urgency. I mean, they're well organised. They know what they want to do. They're playing the type of game they want to play. They're comfortable in their skin. And they have talent. So, like, you've got some, you know, genuine quality as well there. Like, apart from the newbies on the block who are slipping in and out, you know, you still have the old-timers there who know their way around. So I think it's a good balance at the moment in terms of experience. There's good competition. And they have a clear game plan. And they're getting on with it. You know, they're not jumping out as world beaters yet.
I was going to say, are they emerging as genuine contenders?
I think they're on the right track. Like, it's a long road, yes, if you get... The thing about the European competition is really when you get into the knockout stages, you meet the big guns along the way usually, and that really lets you know where you are in the world, you know. If you meet a Clermont or you meet a Toulon or maybe even a Saracens, that brings reality home very quickly. But, look, you can only judge them on what they're doing, and they're doing really well. They're nudging along nicely. And I think, yeah, they're in a good space and they're on the right track. So if they stay on that, you know, then again, you know, if you get to the knockout stage, it's a one-off on the day and you've nothing to lose. You go out and you just throw the kitchen sink at somebody and get them. And that's how teams turn corners sometimes.
This Leinster Academy, though, this is now we're seeing the first generation of guys who, when they were probably about 14, 15, said, I'm going to become a professional rugby player. And you would have known about Luke McGrath and Dan Levy's when they were 15. You were going to go, this guy's going to play for Ireland, or this guy's going to be a pro. And now we're seeing it. They're into their early 20s now. This is the Leinster Academy thing that everyone kind of looked a couple of years ago and going, wow, if they get this together. And it's across every... It's almost three deep in most positions now. And like... They were getting criticised a while ago because, oh, you shouldn't have so many of these out halves or so many, look, they've loads of loose heads, for example, and all that. But they're down. Leo Cullen can turn around and go, here, I'm down to one out half this weekend. So they can actually justify it, you know.
Yeah.
Leinster's progress is really serious. Like, Munster are doing really well, Ulster are doing really well, but the depth charts of Leinster's talent is pretty astonishing if keep going the way it's going.
Okay. You mentioned Ulster at the top, Eddie. This was the one game I caught in full proper, and it was, I mean, unbelievably competitive. Ulster 39, Clermont 32. Even though Ulster galloped into a huge lead at one point, Clermont looked really, really dangerous throughout. Like, it was a brilliant performance. I was watching the Ulster attack even, and the handling skills and everything they were doing, thinking, really, they should actually have done better already this season than sitting third in the group.
Yeah, I think the loss down on Bordeaux, really, and the loss of the bonus point as well, really hurt them. But I think they were... The problem they had on the weekend was that, you know, Clermont, unlike a lot of French teams, when they go behind, they didn't stop playing. They were there to get something out of it. If that was a lot of other French teams, it would have been on the bus and it could have been 50 points. Because, to be fair, after a bad start, Ulster really got on them.
Yeah.
But I think the bench as well had a factor in that. You know, when Clement ran the bench at the end, I think, you know, Ulster were getting tired and they had to run their bench as well. And when it matched up, it gave... And you look at the last quarter, and I think they'll be worried about this. The last quarter, Clermont dominated and they got 14 points. And actually, they had a shot at a draw. They got a choke tackle in. They got a scrum with like the clock going into the red. And they ran the ball and they knocked it on. And had they got onto the front foot there, you know, you'd have feared that they might have had a major comeback and it could have been 39-all. But I just thought, stepping back from it, that Ulster played really, really well. They played... I thought Paddy Jackson was excellent. I thought he mixed his game brilliantly. I thought certainly McCluskey and Marshall were excellent. I thought Ludic was fantastic. Pienaar pulled the strings very well. I mean, they just played well as a team. They were, in a comfortable place. And they got kind of hit early on, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Clermont scored after 2 minutes. And you go, oh, here we go. And they just dug it out. And I just think that they'll be disappointed, though, that they did give up a couple of soft tries that let them back in, and it kind of just changed the dynamics of the group. Like, Clermont were going home empty-handed. They went home with 2 points, which that does change things quite a bit in that group. And,
yeah.
But, and they still have to go to the Lions then next week. Clermont are going to be wired up for this.
Yeah, you could already see it at the end of the last 20 minutes, Eddie, as well. It was a bit more than niggle. It's going to be vicious from the kickoff, I think.
Oh, yeah.
They'll go after Ian Henderson as well, because he was so vital in the victory, I thought. And like he's Ulster's world-class forward, I think, at the moment, you know. I think, you don't win that game in Clermont.
It's hard to see a Lions test without Ian Henderson in it at the moment, you know.
Something they were talking about actually during the commentary on Henderson was, should he start to specialise now? Should he just commit to being a second row, insist on being a second row, and that would be better for his career?
I know. He'd let him do whatever the team needs at the time.
It was Stephen Ferris that said that, actually. He thought,
did he?
Yeah, he said, I just think for his own sake, he should just go on the lines very much as a second row.
He mightn't get into the team on the second row. Yeah, I think Henderson's your ideal bench guy in the Lions. Can't believe we're talking about the Lions.
Sorry, yeah.
So far out.
Way too Lions focused. Okay,
But Clermont, this weekend, I've been down there before for actually a Leinster and a Munster game.
Yeah.
You get out of there with a bonus point and that's huge.
Yeah.
1 point out of Clermont in the middle of December. It's the hardest place to go in Europe.
Yeah.
It's unrelenting. And
well,
it's,
even their opening try was frightening. As Eddie said, you thought, this is going to be an annihilation. This is big trouble here for Ulster. On the Jackson point, so, you know, this brilliant crossfield kick for Bowe, and it leads to the
lovely little try.
His own try was really, really good.
He's always had that little football stuff going about him.
Yeah, I mean, this is his time now. He's arrived.
Yeah, well, he's fending off all the other guys who keep coming up. So every time a Carberry or whoever has a performance, he responds with a 6-from-6 kicks against Canada. That there now was him kind of going, okay, there I am.
Yeah.
So if Johnny, we don't know, Johnny Sexton, we keep getting told he's sanitary clinic, it's rehabbing his hamstrings, all of that. So maybe that what's happening there is they're doing that whole process of getting him back. But that could be, we don't know how long that is. We just don't. So Paddy Jackson, Ireland 10, if there's a problem, that's where he is. He's the incumbent if Johnny doesn't make it.
Yeah. Eddie, did you kind of laugh to yourself at the Charles Piatow try?
Yeah, I was actually watching that live in the bowels of Thomond Park in the press room. And as soon as he got the ball, I said, oh, here we go. I knew he was going to score because he had only one thing on his mind. And he just so athletic, you know, that he's in that sort of space. It's impossible, frankly, to stop him.
Mm.
And I just thought there's no way he wasn't going to score. I'm glad it was heading into the last quarter. He's tended to go out of games actually in the second half, but he stayed on the bike on the weekend. But yeah, it was an extraordinary individual try. He'd know, like an ordinary rugby player, no right getting it, but he's just so athletic and so powerful. And once he got it in his hands, I thought there's no way he's not going to score here. You could just see it all over him. And you could see it in the French players' face as well.
Yeah.
They weren't looking forward to trying to put him down. That was a phenomenal individual try. But, I mean, only that sort of athleticism and aggression and physicality gets you that.
Yeah, he is a phenomenon.
I do think the game of the weekend, though, I presume you're going to get to it, is in Galway in 5:30 on Saturday.
I was going to say, so final point, what chance do we give Connacht at the weekend?
Well, they have to do what we've seen... they have to do to Nathan Hughes what Munster did to Shabal all those years ago when he came over with Sale. They have to target him and put him down because he caused so much damage.
Right.
Launchbury as well. They should go after their figureheads and do it. Bring it right down into the mud and do it the way they do them. You have to basically mug them to catch them because everyone knows Wasps are, well, they are a better team and they're bigger, and it was their power game that stopped Connacht. But if they can, they have to do it. They have to have another one of their special evenings. They did show for 60 minutes that they can do it. You know what I mean? And they've shown what they did to Toulouse that they can do it. So, if they can get the right bodies in the pitch, I think, and fix their lineout, that is a problem. That I don't know how they fix it though. Is the only thing.
Yeah, they lost five of their own. It's a 5:30 kickoff Saturday in
Galway.
It's
teed up. It's the one.
Like all the ingredients are there. Eddie, do you give them much of a chance?
I'll be there actually. Again. So I'm looking forward to it. I think for sure. They'll have left Coventry disappointed, but saying, you know what, we sort out our line out, we hold on to the ball. Because when they had the ball, Connacht, they made good inroads with the ball. They put Wasps at the pin of their collar to contain them at times.
Yeah.
The only thing worries me about Wasps is they have this kind of physicality and firepower that's hard to match. I think Wasps will look at it and say that they created their own problems the way they turned over ball and got turned over, so that their scrum imploded because the kind of scrum demolished them. So I think Wasps will look like they can improve as well. But Connacht certainly in the sports ground with a raucous crowd, and they have to be very accurate, Connacht. They've got to hold on to the ball though. But I certainly think it's not beyond the bounds possibility they can turn them over. They've got to get a lot of things right, and the injury factor is again going to be there, I hope. The guys who are left will be back. You ended up with Keelan Blair playing a full back for, I think, the last 20 minutes or so. If they can get guys back in the field and they play as well as we know they can, absolutely, they'll be there to see it.
Yeah, great stuff. Enjoy that, Eddie. Thanks a million. Gavin Cumsky of the Irish Times, thank you.
Off the Ball with BetDAC.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sport 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.